This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming today, we will hear from New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu, finishing his second term in a few months. Mayor Landrieu will comment on his decision to remove Confederate-era monuments from the city's landscape. He's written a book about it, and we'll talk with him about that, and also get the mayor's take on contemporary American politics. Former Tulane professor Richard Marksberry is here to discuss his reasons for leading the fight against the removal of the monuments in New Orleans. And Advocate Capitol Bureau Chief Mark Ballard will comment on the week at the Capitol, where bills to raise the minimum wage and to ensure equal pay for men and women failed in the Louisiana Senate. A busy week at the Capitol, and also a reported agreement between a former governor's staffer and an employee on a sexual harassment charge. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Richard Marksberry is with us now, a Tulane University retired professor who ended up becoming the voice that was most often heard against the removal of the Confederate-era statues that you just heard Mayor Mitch Landrieu giving reasons why he did this. And nationally, I think the mayor's right. He's getting largely a lot of pats on the back for this. But in Louisiana, a different story. And if you'd like to comment one way or the other, we'd certainly like to hear from you, 877-217-5757. And locally in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. The email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Good morning, Dr. Marksberry.
Good morning.
Before we get to this, I think your backstory is interesting. You're not a man who grew up in Louisiana, but you've been here a long time. Tell us about your odyssey and how you ended up becoming the most prominent spokesman against the removal of the monuments, Dr. Marksberry.
Well, I don't know if I'm the most prominent one, but I am one. I came to move to New Orleans from Richmond, Virginia, in 1973, so I've been here 45 years. So I've been here a fairly long time, living in the city. I went to Tulane to go to graduate school and just stayed here. So it's interesting, you know, that came from Richmond, which is where they have Monument Avenue, which is in the news quite a bit about their very large and prominent monuments.
Well, Mayor Landrieu, for reasons that the rest of the country is absorbing, opened a national conversation on this, and now we have monuments being removed in various locations across the United States. You don't believe this is a good thing. Why not?
Well, the one thing I'll reply to that is that there's not been one monument removed in the United States that was a result of the vote of the local population, not one. And this has all been done by politicians, by councils, by committees, but never by a vote, which I find to be rather
interesting. You mean a vote of the people?
A vote of the people, yes. That's never happened anywhere. In New Orleans, it didn't happen, nor anywhere else. And any of the polls that came out in the city of New Orleans and the one LSU did for the state showed that at least over 65% and then over 72% of the people in the state and in the city did not think they should come down, which I assume would be probably similar to other places they've been taken down. So it's rather interesting that none of the politicians ever allow the people themselves to have a vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, there hasn't been a lot of discussion since the monuments were taken down, at least not to the point it was when it was happening. These are certainly now eyesores in the great city of New Orleans. What do you think about where we go from here?
Well, actually, Jim, on this past weekend, the Taken Down group had events through the city. They encountered Mayor Landrieu at a book signing and was in a friendly encounter, and they produced a list of five additional monuments they want down, so it's not over by any means.
Yeah, there are other Confederate-era monuments that are still standing. It's not like all of them were wiped off the landscape with this decision by the mayor, but the city council was involved as well.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the person who were the people who were the catalyst? Was it the mayor or was it the council?
The mayor was the catalyst.
So you're saying this was a Mitch Landrieu deed complete?
Absolutely. I mean, he writes that in his book. I read his book twice.
Yeah, I know.
He takes full credit for it. And what's interesting is that he does something I've told you on your show before. He does mention in the book, he pulls out, you know, trying to present as a democratic process, the people who had to respond to the council, the named people, which were the city, you know, attorney, et cetera, and they all reported to him. So the ordinance that he used required the people that worked for him to tell the council what their recommendation was. That's not democracy.
He didn't like it when I mentioned that this would be his legacy, but I think it will, unless
he's yes.
Unless he's elected president. But it's a legacy that I'm sure will be discussed a century from now.
And he didn't answer, if you noticed, your question about Walter Isaacson. He danced around that. You know, he didn't answer what he thought about Isaacson's comment that Beauregard shouldn't have come down.
No, he said that he divided it into classes and ultimately decided that Beauregard was in a class that was strong enough to remove. That was a beautiful statue. There's no doubt about the scenic beauty of it, and now it is an eyesore. What do you think should go there in its place, Dr. Marksberry?
Well, you know, I'm within that group that says that property belongs to City Park, and the monument did as well. So City Park's going to decide what's going to go there.
Do you have any suggestions?
I'm going to work on the assumption until they know what's going to go there, they're just going to clean it up and put in some landscaping, would be my guess. But they do have a beautiful collection of sculptures, you know, that Besthoffs either gave or loaned to the park. So I think there's some things they could put out there that would make it look good again. It's certainly a very prominent place.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Dr. Richard Marksberry, retired professor at Tulane, who grew up in the great city of Richmond, came to Louisiana, and the last few years has expressed his concern about the removal of these monuments. A question from Scott about what happens next with the monuments. Where are they now, the ones that were removed?
Two of the monuments, well, we saw that when the mayor was interviewed on 60 Minutes, are in a shed that was built. The Beauregard and Lee are there. Not certain where Davis is, nor where Liberty is. But I think what we know is, for a man that's being discussed for a possible presidency run, you know, he didn't finish this. You know, there was no plan for what to do with them, so they sit in the shed. So the incoming mayor, LaToya Cantrell, has been dumped in her lap. And I assume this is something that she will be rather quickly trying to figure out what to do and resolve it, because just letting those things sit there is not good for anybody.
Bobby in Plaquemine. Hi, Bobby.
You're on. How you doing? Doctor, can you explain to me, when you look at those statues, what kind of pleasure did you get out of looking at those statues, knowing what those men fought for and stood for during that time? Thank you. I appreciate it.
Dr. Marksberry?
I always go back to something that I think is important to know, is that when that war was over, the United States government recognized all of these, you know, individuals as United States veterans. All of these three individuals they took down were U.S. veterans of the war against Mexico. Robert E. Lee has been honored by five presidents, Winston Churchill, United States military. So everybody got over it, and people look for the good qualities often these people. The one thing I found ironic is the issue of the JFK Award and Profile and Courage for the Mayor. In 1960, Senator Kennedy was the Democratic nominee for presidency. He was in Raleigh, North Carolina. He gave a long speech about the South and how important the South was. And he said, if you just bear with me one second, he said this: "For as a New Englander, I recognize that the South is still the land of Washington, who made our nation, of Jefferson, who shaped its direction, and of Robert E. Lee, who, after a gallant failure, urged those who had followed him in bravery to reunite America in purpose and courage." Interesting phrase. So that's what JFK said about Robert E. Lee. He admired him along with Washington and Jefferson, because after the war, what Lee did, after the war, mm-hmm. what Beauregard did, they changed. no different than Robert Byrd, who was in the KKK, and Mary Landrieu and Hillary Clinton both said that he was a mentor to them and how well he served them, because people forgive. So in this case, you had Churchill, Eisenhower, Kennedy, et cetera, do that. So I think, you know, we've got to look at this in a historical perspective.
Is Andrew Jackson next?
Andrew Jackson is on the list of five, for sure.
That's on the take-him-down list,
On take-him-down list, I would suggest that Andrew Jackson is number one on the list. I don't think our new elected mayor probably wants to get involved with monument issues.
There is much going on in New Orleans, and it is still one of the most violent cities in the world. Mm-hmm. The population has dropped, so the murders have dropped, but still I think the latest number is number three in America as far as the rate. So we'll talk about this and more with Dr. Marksberry. Your number 877-217-5757, back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster, and our guest is Mayor Mitch Landrieu of New Orleans, the former lieutenant governor of Louisiana. His book, In the Shadow of Statues, A White Southerner Confronts History. And, of course, Mayor Landrieu will long be remembered for the decision he made to remove some Confederate monuments that were part of the New Orleans landscape for about a century. What was the catalyst after all these years?
Well, I hope that I'm also remembered for rebuilding a great American city that was on its back. But the monuments issue will stand out. Well, you know, as after Katrina destroyed us, everybody knows how badly the city was hurt. Katrina, Rita, Ike, Gustav, the recession, the BP oil spill. We have really been involved in the last 8 years in what I would consider to be as a miraculous recovery. People now who are visiting the city, seeing a live city, a beautiful city. We've got new schools. We've built a new airport, built a new riverfront. And as we were thinking about rebuilding the public landscape of the city and preparing for the 300th anniversary, Wynton Marsalis and a number of other people said, hey, you ought to think about taking those statues down because they don't really reflect who we are. And as you know, we could not have done all the things in the city if the people of New Orleans were not thinking about not only our past, but our future. And it became pretty evident pretty quickly once you started thinking about those monuments and why they were put up, who put them up, that they never really reflected the ethos of New Orleans. We always have been a multicultural city. We're older than the state. We're older than the nation. We're a port city. And those statues did not really reflect who we were as a people. And we decided through a pretty open democratic process that we wanted to change course and take those down and use those spaces that are very public and very prominent to display things that were reflective of what the soul of the city was about.
Now, many people, of course, around the country praised you. Locally, you got some pushback. There were those who said that you should be concentrating more on murders than monuments. How do you answer those critics?
Well, let's separate that criticism. Nationally, it's been held up as being a very positive thing. In the state of Louisiana, outside of New Orleans, which I would not necessarily call locally, individuals had, you know, aggressive feelings, as well as people from across the South who did not live in New Orleans. But in the city of New Orleans, it was true, and it was always true, that the majority of the people wanted those monuments down. And, of course, the people of New Orleans own that property. And so while we're thankful for other people's interest and input, we feel pretty strongly that we ought to be able to decide what to do with our own property. When you're the mayor of a city of New Orleans, every day you have 50 to 100 different things to do, and you can't just do one thing. You have to do them all. Those individuals that said we ought to be concentrating on murder, maybe unaware or intentionally misleading the public, we work on violence every day. And of course, as you know, in our great state of Louisiana, a state that I love, New Orleans isn't the only place where we have a violence problem. We're actually the most violent state in America. And so we have to think through in the state, not just blaming New Orleans for all the bad things, really thinking as one state how we are going to invest in education, health care, and of course, public safety. And so the monuments are a small part of a much larger rebuild that we've done in the city of New Orleans. And of course, we're capable of doing more than one thing at a time.
Now, the statues, of course, were individual decisions, and Walter Isaacson endorses your book and largely endorsed your decision, but he did tell Laura Ingraham in an interview that he thought removing the Beauregard statue was a mistake. Was that a tough call?
You know, it's very interesting that you say that. I actually divided the monuments into two. One, the Liberty Monument, which, of course, was an avowed reverence of white supremacy for a number of white supremacists that killed police officers. For some reason, the people who put that monument up chose to honor the people that actually killed the law enforcement officers. I haven't met anybody other than David Duke that defended the presence of that statue. The other three you basically were identical in who put them up, how they were put up, and what the message was. Beauregard had a little bit better defense than the other two because Beauregard was actually from here. And so some people thought it helped. But essentially, the common thing about all three of those particular statues is this. The historical record reflects that they were not put up to revere those men. They were actually put up to send a message to African Americans that they weren't welcome here and to honor these men for the what they did for the Civil War. And the Civil War, and this is just historically true now, we have to be able to say this, especially in Louisiana, where we've sold more people into slavery than anywhere else in the country. The Civil War intended to split the United States of America in two. In other words, to destroy the country. And so without condemning anybody that fought in the Civil War, we all have ancestors that participated in that event. It is worth noting that it was designed to rip the country apart. And those people that fought in that war might have been warriors, but they certainly weren't patriots trying to unify the country. Now, this shouldn't be hard for us in this moment where all of us are seeking to be better patriots and people that represent the United States of America. Secondly, I don't think it's historically debatable anymore that the war was fought to protect and to preserve slavery, which, of course, was one of the great atrocities. We have a state that has a very large African-American population in the city of New Orleans. It's 60% plus. It is an affront to those individuals who are our fellow citizens that own with everybody those pieces of property. And I think that just needs to be stated clearly. And I don't think it's a surprise that we're still suffering for some of the vestiges of slavery. And if Louisiana ever wants to take its rightful place and get the benefit of all of the people that live here, we have to talk about this issue in a way that people are unwilling to do at this point.
The book from Mayor Mitch Landrieu of New Orleans is In the Shadow of Statues. Mayor Landrieu also discusses his career, which now spans more than 30 years as an elected official, starting in 1987 when he was elected to the Louisiana House. And midway through your first term, a man named David Duke joined you in the lower chamber, and you write about that experience. And Mayor Landrieu, you compare his rise, Mr. Duke's, with that of Donald Trump in 2016. What are the parallels?
First of all, a couple things. This is really a book about race in America, but it's also a book about the South. And I love the South. I'm a Southerner through and through. And one of the things that I express concern about is how much we've lost for ourselves and for our kids by not being able to have racial reconciliation. Secondly, the comments that I make in the book are pretty clear. I don't think that everybody that voted for Donald Trump is a racist. I never said that in the book. What I said was that what we saw in 1990 when Duke was here and his ability to speak in coded language really kind of pulled out of the woods some people who actually are racist and are now beginning to become much more bold in their public comments because President Trump speaks in dog whistles sometimes too, not all the time. There's clearly a lot of room in American politics to disagree on what the conservative approach to governing is or the liberal approach, what your position is on tax cuts, immigration, other things. But the one thing that we can't countenance in America is the cause of white supremacy. And as you know, when President Trump again ran for office, David Duke came out of the woods, as well as other people who were now professed members of the Klan that started talking about hearing, you know, him talk about the issue of white supremacy. And that's what they were hearing. And so the point I make in the book is that when that raises its head in America at any point in time, you can't have, you know, a false sense that that's equal to talking about racial justice. It's not. And white supremacy is a very dangerous thing. It has led us to very dark places in the history of the world. And when that begins to occur, conservatives and liberals have to call that out for what it is.
I have stated on occasion that I think you're the most gifted speaker in Louisiana politics. And certainly now you're getting a lot of national attention. You were featured at the Correspondents' Dinner. You're getting nice reviews from national people who look at these sorts of things, and there is some speculation you may run for president. What would have to happen for that to occur?
Well, don't we do that all the time to all elected officials? We do that to Governor Jim Doolin. I don't have any intention of doing that at the moment. As you know, and as you said, and you've been very kind about this, I've served for 30 years. It's been a great honor of my life. I feel like I've dedicated a lot of my life to trying to help make Louisiana better, and that was my way of giving back. What happens in the future is anybody's guess, but it's really not something that I'm thinking about right now. As I have said, and I've admonished people, President Trump's only been in office for a year. You know, this 24/7 365 year after year speculation about the next election stops us from addressing the issues that are in front of us right now, and we have plenty. And I would ask people to stay focused on that. The future will work itself out. Believe me, there will not be a dearth of people, you know, who are going to run against President Trump. There will be a lot of people on the Democratic side and the Republican side of the country, you know, 2.5 years from now, are going to try to have to decide whether we're going in the right direction or the wrong direction.
Lastly, each day is an adventure with President Trump. And in the latest news cycle has a Louisiana person at the forefront in Stormy Daniels. What do you make of this?
Well, I don't really pay much attention to it, to be honest with you. One of the things that just is so just surprising is that every day, you know, that's the issue of the day. Tomorrow it'll be North Korea. The next day it'll be something else. I make an observation as an executive, having run, of course, the Department of Culture, Recreation, and Tourism, and now the City of New Orleans. You cannot run an organization in chaos. It's really important to find good people and try to get a strategy and a plan, whatever it might be. And then we can argue about whether that's the right thing. Having so many people move in and out of the executive branch, or people being fired, or having these issues that move from day to day, really keeps the nation off balance and off focus. And governing in chaos is just not a good place. You wouldn't run a football team like that. You wouldn't run a school like that. You know, you wouldn't run a little league team like that. And so I would just kind of, you know, hope, like all Americans, hope that we'll find some stability and some continuity as we go forward. But this issue will be off of the front page next week, and then it'll be something else that's equally mind-blowing. And that's just an uncomfortable place, I think, for everybody to be.
Mayor Mitch Landrieu's book is In the Shadow of Statues, A White Southerner Confronts History. We appreciate your time, and congratulations on the book, Mayor Landrieu.
Great. Thank you, Jim.
And we'll return in just a moment with Tulane retired professor Richard Marksberry, who came this way from another part of the country and then ended up leading the charge to keep the statues. We'll talk about it after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing today, and your number is 877-217-5757. In our remaining time with Dr. Marksberry, coming later, we'll hear from the man who works the Capitol for the Advocate. He's the Capitol Bureau Chief, Mark Ballard. The book from Mitch Landrieu, In the Shadow of Statues, has been getting a lot of attention. The New York Times has done a couple of reviews on it, and as I stated with the mayor, largely a positive press coming out of this book and the mayor's decision nationally. Locally, a much different story. I think Mitch Landrieu would probably be the first to acknowledge that his days as a candidate in Louisiana are probably over, but there is speculation he could run nationally and perhaps for the highest office in the land. Dr. Marksberry, Holly in the Garden District asked, what do you think of this? And she asked if you can say anything nice about Mayor Landrieu.
Nice. I voted for Mayor Landrieu the first time he ran. How's that? But the second time I voted for Judge Bagnaris. So I'll say that. The one thing I'd like to address about his book, which he said just now on your show as well, about the message that went up for these statues, which is historical revisionism. These statues went up to honor people, maybe for the wrong reason or for the right reason. That's for other people to decide. But they weren't put up to send a message, you know, to blacks that they weren't wanted here, which is his quote. And I'll use as a great example, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, while he was president of the United States, dedicated the Robert E. Lee statue in Dallas, Texas. So is Mayor Landrieu really suggesting that FDR dedicated a statue for the purpose of sending a message to blacks? When Mayor Landrieu ran, he got 66% of the black vote in New Orleans. When FDR ran, 4 months after he dedicated that statue, he got 71% of the black vote nationally. Those are the kinds of things that are kind of fact-checking, I think, that the mayor ignores with this idea of the messaging. There was a lot of things one could say about these statues, as the gentleman who just called, you know, do they honor this and honor that? But to say they sent the message, there's just no historical basis at all in that.
Do you think the mayor would be a strong candidate if he ran for president?
I think the mayor has not found anybody in the media yet who has asked him any challenging questions. His interviews on television, he gets all softballs. No one's asked him about the Sewage and Water Board in New Orleans. You're going to be president of the United States, and you can't manage a sewage and water board. there are a lot of things I think that the mayor has not dealt with, that when he goes through a primary, I think he won't be able to withstand it.
He sounds almost identical to Bobby Jindal when he was ramping up to run for president of the United States.
Yes.
When a candidate says, I haven't made up my mind, that usually means I have made up my mind, I'm just not ready to tell you.
That's right. Those are the coaches, too, right? When they get jobs, well, I haven't been offered a job yet, then the next day they take the job.
Yeah, so I think he's running. And he has some appealing qualities, being from the South. There aren't many Democrats in the South who are prominent figures. He's certainly got a famous last name, and now he's got some fame for doing what he did with the monuments. And as I stated, and I think even you would acknowledge Richard Marksberry, he can give a speech. He can give a very good speech.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
He's
a gifted orator.
He is. One of the best, and as you note, he notes in his book, he's a theater graduate from Catholic University. So he knows the art of public speaking, and nothing wrong with that. That's part of the job. But you have chided him a bit for being a theater graduate and being an expert on history. Is it possible that you could be both?
Sure, you can. Absolutely. I don't believe he is, however.
Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Hi, Charlotte. You're on the air with Dr. Marksberry.
Thank you. Hello. The reason I'm calling is because there is a professor at university in Lafayette who has been interviewed on radio and has spoken about the statues that have been placed on display that represent the Southern soldiers in the Civil War, and he disagrees with this professor who is speaking with you now as your guest, Jim. The professor in Lafayette has said that those statues were placed there to send a message to colored people in the area. And he is originally from Illinois and came here to the Lafayette area and asked about the issue of race and whether there was any disturbance, and he was always told by the people in the area, no, there was no problem. So he has done his own research, and he said that if anyone has any problems, they can go and read in the Library of Congress to see and in the newspapers of that time to see what was said. Thank you for allowing me to contribute. Bye-bye.
Bye, Charlotte. Richard Marksberry?
Well, I would agree with her. Go read the newspapers. Newspapers are excellent. Read the work of the monument committees that put all these up throughout the United States and some in the North as well. They weren't all in the South. And I don't believe anybody anywhere ever said that they were going to be put up to send a message to African Americans. I don't believe that exists.
When was the statue at the Lee Circle put up?
1884, which is interesting because according to the mayor's book, that would be before the Jim Crow era.
Before the Jim Crow era, but after the Civil War.
Oh, absolutely, sure.
So,
I'm just going after his.
Yeah,
kind of history
there are some inaccuracies. There's no doubt, as most books have. The mayor, I think it might have been you and others, has been chided for no footnotes. But I thought it was a fairly well written book. It's a breezy book, not a hard read at all, but. You didn't like the book very much. You didn't like the style of it, anything about it, did you?
Well, I think it was a self-serving book. I mean, as I point out, the number of times that he uses the word I almost approach 1,000. And I think there were so many things he could have said, you know, but it just goes on to other things. I didn't find the book illuminating in any aspect. In other words, sometimes you read things to learn what it is you don't know, and there was nothing I got out of that about the mayor, about Katrina, about the murder rate in New Orleans that I didn't already know.
Now, Thomas asks, is there any way to rescind this? I don't know how you would do it, but can you put, if there were some kind of movement in the opposite direction, can you put some of those statues back where they were or put them somewhere else in a prominent place?
There are still people working on ideas about relocating the monuments at some point, which obviously would never be back on public land in New Orleans. But to have them sit in the warehouse doesn't do anybody any good. Even Mayor Landrieu, at one point early on, thought they should be placed someplace that they could be contextualized, his words. And I think, you know, I hope and I think there are people, as we speak, working on ways in which these monuments can be put up on private property where they would be contextualized.
David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on the air with Professor Marksberry.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I can't imagine people in Germany building a statue, say, to Adolf Hitler and put it in a public area because Robert E. Lee killed more Americans than Hitler killed. And how would you feel about that, and particularly if you're a Jewish person, and put it on public soil in the middle of Berlin? And would you support that, Professor?
Professor Marksberry?
My answer to that, Jim, and we always seem to get this one, if people would do their research, two gentlemen who I assume your caller recognizes, Dwight Eisenhower, the commander of the Allied forces in Europe to fight the Nazis, and Winston Churchill, who just now had several movies out to fight the Nazis, each of them publicly praised Robert E. Lee for the kind of person he was. Dwight Eisenhower hung Robert E. Lee's portrait in the White House and called him one of the greatest commanders in American history. So, you know, the comparison to Adolf Hitler is just absurd. But it's an easy one for people to make that don't have any idea of history. So if this gentleman knows more than Eisenhower and Churchill, then let's let him explain it.
Another listener asks if you're okay with the removal of the Liberty Monument statue.
I have no problem with Liberty Monument. Mine has always been the three gentlemen, which are sculptures. They're works of art. Those are apples and oranges, putting those two. The Liberty Monument had been moved. It had been partially destroyed. So it had no place for where it was any longer there.
If he had stopped there, you would have been fine with it.
I think most everybody who was involved in trying not to have any monuments removed would have been fine with that, but that wasn't the case. One of my concerns early on is, you know, that once this stops, it doesn't end. And so Malcolm Suber, part of Take 'Em Down NOLA, was on the Laura Ingraham television show 4 weeks ago, where he said to the United States of America that he thought the name of Washington, D.C. should be changed. That's where we're going with all of this until somebody says it's time to stop.
And Andrew Jackson, which he's also featured outside the White House, by the way.
Right, Lafayette Square, you've got Andrew Jackson.
So I suppose we start with Jackson Square and then we go to Lafayette Square. I don't think that's going to happen. But Malcolm Suber would like for it to happen. And I'm sure he's not alone.
I imagine, Jim, 3 years ago, people would have thought that the statues that have been taken down already wouldn't have been taken down either.
Well, so. Dr. Marksberry, I have a feeling this is a story that will continue to resonate, and we thank you for your time today. Thanks for
being with
us.
Appreciate the opportunity.
Take
thank
care.
You.
Talk to
Bye.
You soon. Bye. And I do want to note that we lost a fine journalist, Chris McDaniel. He was a former assistant news director at WAFB for many years, a fine investigative reporter. Went off to Kentucky, and he was a guest on this show a few times. He noted in Kentucky he had success as a news director by hiring, I think it was 6 former Miss Kentuckys. But he was a very good newsman and a fine friend to many of us, member of our coffee group, and he died last Saturday at 70. Funeral services tomorrow at Green Oaks Memorial Park at noon, officiated by his longtime friend, John West. We'll be back with more Talk Louisiana after this brief pause. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar producing, and we come down the home stretch with Mark Ballard, the intrepid reporter, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. It's been a busy week at the Capitol, and a new wrinkle with a story today that the state is paying $85,000 to a former employee of the governor's office and her attorney in a suit. The plaintiff alleged that Governor John Bel Edwards' former deputy chief of staff, Johnny Anderson, sexually harassed the woman while the two were working for Governor Edwards. Now, Mark Ballard, this is a story that preceded the latest lawsuit against Tom Shedler, But Johnny Anderson was a close advisor to the governor and had been accused of this kind of thing before. What do you make of this most recent development?
That they don't want to go to court. What it sounds like is 85,000 is a lot, but it's less than what they had paid for other sexual harassments to settle other sexual harassment claims. So he's had a past. He had accusations raised against him when he was at Southern University, and so and also working on Governor Blanco's staff.
I don't think he's coming back to the governor's staff, but you're right, $85,000 in this day and time, it's a lot of money to most of us, but in a suit of this kind, sometimes it can reach seven figures, so it's basically a settlement, and I'm sure the state of Louisiana is very happy to resolve at that amount, and people's lives go on from here. Now, It's been a remarkable news week of all kinds, and of course Baton Rouge news has been dominated by the decision in the Alton Sterling case from Attorney General Jeff Landry. This is no surprise, but the fact that a grand jury was not impaneled, some people take fault with that.
And of course they have not released the tapes in which he seemed to rely on his opinion on that. What was interesting is that no one believed that it would come out in any other way, is what we kept hearing throughout the entire wait, as it was.
And at the Capitol, legislation for minimum wage and equal pay failed. And it failed in the Senate, which is a more charitable body for these kinds of measures, but the legislature at this point has no stomach for this kind of change in law. What do you make of this?
It appears to be so. I mean, equal pay had made it out of the Senate before, and only to die over in the House. It looks to me like that they're just not wanting to deal with it this time around. There's a lot of issues that they're trying to kind of avoid right now in the legislature. This morning, they're going to make another stab at trying to get minimum wage in the House committee, but that's where it's all died before. So.
And a measure to tweak tops, to cap it at $4,000 a year, that didn't go anywhere, didn't get out of committee.
No, they're going to be tweaking tops somehow, but not by that. It was the most sweeping of the various proposals that were out there. They would just made $4,000 a year, kind of a grant for the basic tops package.
And in a battle to change the way Louisiana cares for its elderly, nursing home owners and the AARP were pitted against each other, and on Tuesday, the nursing homes won the vote in the Senate Health and Welfare Committee by a 6-2 vote.
Indeed, they thought that there might be a chance with all of the publicity that has been put on the nursing home industry and their connections with the Louisiana legislature, but it looks like those connections were a lot stronger than the folks that wanted to have the elderly have the opportunity to stay at home. Now, yesterday, a committee did kind of take a smack at the nursing home industry by allowing cameras within the rooms. That's still got a long way to go, though.
Yeah, that was Helena Moreno. She wants to ensure nursing homes are required to allow residents and their families to place what is termed surveillance cameras in their rooms. What is this about?
Well, it came about with a woman whose mother, who had Alzheimer's, had, you know, came up with bruises and injuries that nobody seemed to be able to explain, and she wanted to put a camera in the room so that she could, you know, at least find out, you know, how was it that she got these injuries, and was blocked by the nursing home industry. She went to court on it, but then her mother died, so that made the lawsuit moot. So that was the kind of the genesis of this.
Now, there is a move to lower Louisiana's drinking age. The legal age is now 21, as it is in every other state in the country, and basically you forfeit your highway funds if you go lower than that. But Senate Bill 429 would allow 19- and 20-year-olds to buy and consume alcohol if they obtain a certificate and parental consent.
Well, and one thing you need to remember, though, right now, is that the current law allows minors to drink if they're doing it, you know, at the dinner table with their family. This would be basically expanding, that law, and allowing this with the certificates and everything. The sponsor of it is pushing it as a way of fighting, I guess, or addressing this over-drinking, the binge-drinking problems that we've been having in Louisiana and elsewhere, particularly on the college campuses. However, that bill has not been scheduled for a hearing, so mm-hmm. It'd be a long way to say if it's going to get any traction at all. So
that's Eric LaFleur's bill. Bulletproof backpacks would be allowed in Louisiana public schools under a bill that breezed through a Senate committee this week. This is Mike Walsworth, a Republican from West Monroe, who is the sponsor. What's he trying to do?
Well, frankly, probably trying to do something that avoids getting into the whole gun debate. They're hoping to, parents a feeling of some sort of security with all of the school shootings that are going on.
We're visiting with Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, and you can send an email talk@talklouisiana.org, and a lady, I presume, has done this. Her name is Cherie. She says that I should ask you about another bill involving alcohol, Senate Bill 246. This one, Mark, I think would create provisions for Louisiana retailers to deliver factory-sealed alcohol to consumers through delivery services. This is an interesting bill.
Yeah, I thought so as well. I mean, it's basically doing, like waiter and that sort of thing to deliver alcohol just like they deliver meals now. It made it through. It's going to the Senate floor, and I guess we'll see how it goes. It kind of sets up a way that they can go, a procedure that these companies can go about to do that, to deliver alcohol the same way that they deliver meals.
And Louisiana senators declined early in the week to eliminate gender-specific terms from state marriage laws.
And the argument on that, I mean, they basically, I guess it was the Brumfield decision in the Supreme Court, is basically found a lot of the laws that in Louisiana were unconstitutional. And what Senator J.P. Morrell from New Orleans was trying to do is Law Institute was recommending that they make these changes. The Family Forum, a conservative Christian group, argued that we're already within, we're not violating Brumfield, and therefore we shouldn't go through and make all of these changes. They seem to be arguing that since we're not violating it now, that if we get a new Supreme Court, that all of this could be changed back. And I just think that the senators on that committee were not willing to kind of go out there on the limb.
What's the prognosis now for an early conclusion to the regular session? Where do we stand?
It's still up in the air right now. The leadership seems to be saying that they want to do this. I mean, it would save money for the state, but we also have a goodly amount of.
I'm sorry, we may have lost Mark.
But hold the budget.
There you go.
And get it passed, and without having to go into a special session to raise more money.
You're saying a special session might be averted?
It's possible. Right now, it's up in the air. Because not everybody's on board with that idea. But they are moving bills a lot faster than they have in the past. I mean, we can see that they are working fairly hard as if they want to clear up their dockets by mid-May. But on the other hand, you do have a sizable group of folks that say that, we can do this without doing another special session.
Well, we thank you for joining us, Mark Ballard, as always. We'll call on you again next week. It was a busy week at the Capitol, and thanks for your insights.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
See you soon. We're back tomorrow for a Good Friday edition of this program with Ali Baltazar producing, and we thank you for joining us, and we'll have much to talk about tomorrow as well. Until then, for Ali, I'm Jim. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.